Thanks very much, Ian, and hopefully thank you for staying awake if you can manage it. So I've just sort of said, the key message that I sort of want to leave you to take away is this idea of the difficulty of prediction, because underpinning any effort to reduce emissions or develop any kind of policy is the need to make a prediction of some kind. And I think really one of the key underlying components in our findings was that individuals and organisations have difficulty with prediction, and that's why you commonly see problems arising out of a range of different policies. And the more targeted you want to be in your policy to pay precisely what you think someone is willing to do something for, the more you're in the business of prediction. So what did we do with our study? Essentially, we looked at a whole range of different policies. We ignored some to do with information. We were going to write that up, and then we ran out of time. I was going to spend a lot of time bagging the Don Burke advertisement that probably many of you are too young to remember. But that was a wonderful waste of money. Could have talked about the Climate Clever program as well, and a whole heap of other things that I was looking forward to bagging the crap out of, but we didn't get around to it. So what we looked at were market-based measures, things like the renewable energy target, the greenhouse gas abatement scheme, the Queensland gas target, which involved tradable certificates, grant tendering, rebates, and energy efficiency regulatory standards. And there's a lot of policies and programs that fit underneath those broad categories of measures, but they capture a very large proportion of the sorts of initiatives that governments have tried since 97 to reduce emissions in the stationary energy sector. So that's what we restricted ourselves to. Now, the key thing that we were looking at, we weren't thinking about how you're going to do it, execute an energy transformation by 2050. We were very narrowly focused on what's it going to take for us to achieve our 2020 emissions reduction target. And that's actually quite important. One, because both sides of politics are publicly saying that they've got the same target. And so we said, well, okay, let's take that. There's an uncontroversial thing. And in fact, that's not contingent on what China does. That's not contingent on what India does or what the US does. They've both adopted a target of a 5% reduction. One of them's got a formalised carbon price as their mechanism of doing it. The other side of politics is saying, yeah, we're committed to that, but China and all these other guys should do something. Well, no. You're all accepting that you're going to try and reduce emissions by 5% below 2020, 5% below 2000 levels by 2020. So how are we going to do it? Now, the thing is, we've got to get quite a lot of abatement, and we've got to get a lot of abatement within a short period of time, and we don't want to pay too much for it. And the other thing is, we want to be reasonably confident that we're going to get there. If we're going to initiate initiatives today, we want to have some kind of confidence that they're going to deliver our target, because you can't do it all at the last minute. So they were the four criteria that we applied in looking at different policies of the past to say, how effective are these sorts of things going to be in achieving this target that both sides of politics are saying they're committed to? Now, in short, our findings were that the market-based measures, so the renewable energy target, the greenhouse gas abatement scheme, and the Queensland gas target, they have their critics, they have imperfections associated with them, but the bottom line is they've been able to deliver. They've clearly delivered the vast majority of the abatement of any of the policy measures that have been tried, and their cost, it's not the cheapest thing going around compared to some of these other ones here, so some of these grant tendering programs aren't bad in terms of their cost, the thing is, they can deliver the volume at a reasonable price. That's the key thing, is the combination of those two things. Volume and cost was not too bad. Grant tendering, you can get some abatement really, really cheap through some of these programs like the greenhouse gas abatement program. The problem is you sort of struggle for volume is the key thing. Now, with the rebates, you don't get any volume, or you get very little volume, and you pay a very large amount of money for it. So they fail on both counts. And then energy efficiency standards are a really peculiar one where we're expecting to get quite a large amount of abatement, and we've already got a large amount of abatement, and it's actually saved us money. That's the behavioural barrier issue there, where they've actually been incredibly successful. So they sort of muck up the story somewhat about the virtue of markets. Nonetheless, we then look at issues around speed, which sort of change the picture somewhat. So go to the one that I hate the most, and that's grant tendering. Now, with this particular initiative, what you get is this is the press release. This is $1.2 billion. This is, for any of you that have any memory of greenhouse policy going back around 2004, 2005, can anyone remember the line, we have a billion-dollar climate change policy? Can anyone put up your hand if you can remember that line? Richard, come on, surely. Yep. Okay. That used to be the line. That was back in 2003, 2004. I think they upgraded it. They had like a $700 million program, then they upgraded it to, we've got a billion-dollar climate change program. Oh, yeah, of course, the Democrats delivered that one. That's right, yeah. Now, the thing is, that money never got spent, or a very small fraction of that got spent, and it mainly got spent on bureaucrat salaries. So what we have here is, this was three key programs that have been developed by the New South Wales State Government, called the New South Wales Energy Savings Fund, the Greenhouse Gas Abatement Program, which sounds peculiarly similar to the Direct Action Policy, and the Low Emission Technology Demonstration Fund, GGAP, the Democrats were responsible for that one. That was $400 million to buy lease cost abatement. So they announced this. They never got around to spending that amount of money or even allocating it. This money ended up with projects that they funded, that they allocated in a tendering round, that got around to saying to the government, oh, actually, you know what? We just couldn't deliver what we said we were going to deliver, so we're just going to pull out of the project and you can have your money back. These projects here, they're a wonderful thing. What they do is they get allocated money and then they sit on it for 5 years before they actually decide whether they're going to build or not. This $275 million associated with these programs is a bunch of projects the government said they're going to give money to, and they've told you all they're going to give money to, but the guys haven't got around yet to organising their financing, getting their permits, all of those sorts of things that then say, right, I'm going to start pouring concrete. Then we have a bunch of projects here that are, yep, that are actually starting to pour concrete or doing something, and these are the ones that have actually delivered some abatement. So out of that money, it flows through down to that. Now, GGAP started back in, what year was it announced? 2002. So, and LETDF was 2004, and the New South Wales Energy Savings Fund was 2005. So we've still got a bunch of money that's sitting there in limbo land, and we've really only, in the end, delivering that much. So what happens is grant tendering programs make for great press releases, but they don't do very much else. Now, the thing is, you can squeeze out a good deal. So what you do is you get people to tender. They don't know what anyone else is doing because it's all done through a confidential process. There's no price signal. And government enters into a private negotiation with each tenderer. And in some circumstances, they'll say to the tenderer, I think you can do better than what you're offering. How about you change that price and let's come up with a different one? And they enter into individual negotiations with each proponent. So sometimes you get some of those projects, they get up and you get a great deal, you get low-cost abatement. But volume and time are appalling and most of the selected projects never happen, and government has a habit of losing interest and then stealing the money to spend on something else like the flood, Queensland floods. This is going to happen with CCS flagships. This is going to happen with solar flagships. The projects are never going to happen, and we can see that right now. With rebates, it's pretty simple. They're expensive and they generally don't deliver a lot. Why is that? They are fast to roll out, but generally the products that get selected are done for political reasons without a lot of great deal of thought about whether they're the best way to reduce emissions. And the really bad thing is not just that they don't deliver very much, but they actually, in some respects, might undermine industry capacity because they end up with a situation where an industry goes through a huge boom and then the government changes their mind or starts losing money, and then they just pull the rug from underneath the industry, and a whole heap of people end up out of work. With the market-based measures, the key thing is that the government announces a target, and generally industry is able to over-deliver on that target. And it's not the cheapest, but generally it delivers volume and it delivers it at a reasonable price. There certainly have been some issues around design of those programs. Gaming has been common in those programs as well, and often there have been busts in those programs as well in terms of excessive supply coming forward and then prices cratering, in fact, in just about all of them, partly because government undermines the target, the integrity of the target. Energy efficiency schemes, standards have done very well but take a long time to roll out, and that's partly an important thing because it means that you end up with high quality standards. So it's important that you put the time into them. Now, this is the thing I wanted to talk about. This is the way of sort of trying to think about how we look at different policy mechanisms. And what we've got here is this is the extent to which the government tries to tailor the amount of the subsidy or support they give. So down here, they do no tailoring at all. They just say, I'm just after CO2. Right? And that's just a CO2 price. They don't do any tailoring. They don't try and tailor it to different technologies. Then you start tailoring according to technology groups. So that's the renewable energy target here. There's some tailoring involved in GGAS because you've got to do a whole heap of stuff around benchmarks. Then we end up with the other side is when is support committed? Do you do it prior to the project being committed? Do you do it when the project is installed? Or do you pay them after output is delivered, which might be a tonne of CO2 or a megawatt hour of electricity. And this one here, you just say, oh, I don't care, as long as it's installed, show me proof of installation and I'll give you money. And this one is, I'll select you in advance before you've even committed the project and I'll individually negotiate with you about how much money I'm going to pay you. So the issue is it's always tempting for people to try and deliver support in as targeted a manner as possible. Because one, politicians get to choose, so they love it. It also means that you can get a better deal because you just pay exactly what that person is asking for. That's what the coalition are saying with their direct action scheme, is that it's going to be so cheap because they're only going to pay tree planting people just what it needs to do tree planting, and they won't have to pay them what it requires to replace coal with gas-fired generation. So that's what they think they can do and why they're going to be cheaper than an emissions trading scheme. And you don't pay for things that you think would happen anyway, so you don't get the windfall gain situation. But you increase the level of difficulty with prediction. The more tailored you wish to make it, the more prone to error. You get too little abatement in terms of grant tendering. You think you're getting a great deal, but you get nothing. Or you end up with rebates where you get way more than what you budgeted for and you end up with a bust. The earlier you commit money before the person actually delivers something, the greater the probability you'll get less than what you expect. And the longer it takes to make a decision, generally, although rebates are pretty fast. But tendering is incredibly slow. So the other issue is we can design these policy instruments to better mimic markets. Now, the value of your typical market-based, any kind of normal market for a physical commodity, is that you end up with a dynamic between supply, price, and demand. But what we're doing with our instruments is we usually we fix price, or we fix demand, or we fix supply, or we adopt something approaching a command and control. And it might be worthwhile us looking at hybrids, where we have price ceilings and price caps if we've got a mandated target, or with feed-in tariffs we have automatic step-downs according to the amount of capacity that's installed. So there might be a way that we can do tailoring or these sorts of things and adopt hybrids that might end up with a better outcome. So I'll leave it to the discussion.